The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. They've put contingency plans in place to ensure an uninterrupted banking service for you. Stay safe. Absa is a registered FSP. Good evening. Welcome to The Money Show on this Monday night. We've got Karen Zoid joining us at 7:30 this evening. She is one of South Africa's foremost musicians. She's a television star in her own right. We'll speak to her about money coming up later. We've also got Wandile Sehlobo, the agricultural economist, joining us too. He's got his brand new book, Finding Common Ground, all about land reform. And it's a series of essays that he's written over the years, but collated and brought together, make a far stronger statement of just the essays themselves in their individual form. So that is very valuable. We'll talk to him about that. We'll talk to First Rand. They've launched a group-wide program to bring relief in the time of COVID-19. We'll talk to a whole bunch of people this evening about the state of the economy. Of course, the ratings agency Moody's joined the party on Friday night and cut South Africa's investment grade to junk. That has had serious consequences on the currency market today, and those consequences could get worse too. Lots to talk about tonight on The Money Show. Not all of it pleasant, not all of it. Some pleasant bits, but all of it important.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702. For the curious.
A case of COVID-19 confirmed in Khayelitsha, a case confirmed in Alexandra. This is the stuff of health workers' nightmares. People living in close confines finding themselves at risk of rapid infection. That is what has got to be contained and controlled. We're 4 days done and dusted into the, so far, 21-day lockdown. To all intents and purposes, you've made it through 4 days, and well done. Okay, another 17 to go. And it's going to be tough, but not only for you and for people living in far worse conditions than you might be living in, but warnings over the weekend from the BUSA Deputy President, Business Unity South Africa Deputy President Martin Kingston, that economic shutdown is going to precipitate a deep structural depression over an extended period of time. Clarity, please. Martin Kingston, Vice President at Business Unity South Africa. Just how bad are things from your perspective?
I think things are very bad, Bruce. They're bad both from a societal point of view, but also obviously from an economic point of view. If we look at the humanitarian challenges in the healthcare, well, provision of healthcare to those who are the most vulnerable in society, they are now in a crisis. As you just said, we've now found a COVID positive case in Alexandria. It was just a matter of time. We're particularly concerned about the townships and the informal settlements, and the stress it's going to place on the healthcare system, and the need, therefore, to contain movement and to observe social distancing. The more we do that, the more hopeful we are that we'll come out of this as quickly as possible. The reality is that we were already in a recession. That was before COVID-19 descended on South Africa, not just the domestic impact, but obviously against an appalling global background where there's catastrophic ramifications for Africa and potentially for South Africa. And we've doubled down in the context of the downgrade. Many of us anticipated it. But the outlook in the immediate short term is extremely bleak. And now we've got to talk about mitigation strategies so that we can rebuild our economy after we've actually dealt with the immediate challenges of the crisis. And that rebuild is going to take a long time. So certainly we anticipate that it's not going to be a recession. It's going to be a fundamental depression. We're going to have a step down in the level of economic activity, obviously exacerbated by the lockdown, which is a necessary step. And it's going to take time to recover. And in doing so, we're going to have to be prepared to be much more flexible about the structural reform that we implement and the speed and agility with which we do so.
Explain to me the difference between a recession, a depression, and what you call a fundamental depression.
Well, I believe that we're now looking at negative growth. Certainly, we're working on the numbers, Bruce, for the balance of this year. We don't think it's going to be 2 or 3%. It'll be much more fundamental than that. Could extend indeed into next year. Many people, unfortunately, losing their jobs, some of them probably already as businesses begin to shutter. So we see a step down in the level of economic activity. We see, as I said, a large number of incremental unemployed people joining the ranks of those who are already unemployed. And we're going to have to gird our loins in a much more fundamental way than we'd thought before in terms of where our priorities lie. So what we see is not necessarily a U-shaped recovery or even a V-shaped recovery, but probably much more of an L-shaped recovery. In other words, over an extended period of time to begin to get back onto an economic trajectory which sees real positive, sustainable growth in the system. And that's going to take an extended period of time.
Martin Kingston, the Vice President of Business Unity South Africa. Thank you. Gulam Belim is the Group Chief Economist at Standard Bank. Can you be any less pessimistic about the state of our economy, Gulam? Because it does feel like we're headed into a very deep trough.
Bruce, while Martin is girding his loins and drawing on the alphabet soup of descriptions, let me cling to some of his notions. And I think what it will look like, and not to be creative unnecessarily, but I think we are on course for a Nike swoosh path of economic performance. In other words, a very substantial and immediate plunge in economic output, in income generation, and also in wealth destruction. But with relative brevity, the economy will bottom and then in a grinding way begin to recover. So maybe it has some makings of an L-shaped profile and maybe some makings of a U-shaped profile. But I guess a resonance with Martin's remarks, this is unprecedented. We know, for instance, that the global financial crisis of 2008 and 2009 was twice the damage of the garden variety recession over the previous 30 or 40 years, and this will surpass even the GFC.
This, however, provides an opportunity, and a rare opportunity. For the last, 8 years, maybe longer, South Africa has been warned that it earns too little and spends too much, and it needs to either find ways to liberate the economy to grow more so that we can justify the way we spend money. We've also seen wholesale plunder of the economy. That much is very, very clear. But we've been caught up in political infighting, in political posturing, in political jockeying for so much of the last 2 years when we should have been doing a really deep repair job on the economy. And we've seen many signals over the last year or two where, oh, this is a critical inflection point. This is an opportunity for Cyril Ramaphosa to stamp his authority, for Tito Mboweni to take the reins. But surely, this is that opportunity.
Indeed, and I think the president has already signaled that he crossed the nettle. So I would, and as you will well know, suggest that South Africa's rebuilding, reset, recalibration episode really has two installments to it. The one, largely institutional reform. And I think we've seen an enormous amount of milestones over the last 2 years. But your sights are more set on macroeconomic reforms, quite clearly. And in this respect, there, the president seemingly has been far more guarded. And there has been seemingly holy cows that will remain exactly that, untouchable. But I think given the substantial GDP shock, the ensuing revenue and broader fiscal pressures that will unfold, and the need, quite simply, for collective sacrifice, I think the ensuing days and weeks, we are going to talk about salary sacrifices amongst a broad swathe of white-collar workers, for instance. The public sector just simply cannot be clinging to the type of contractual agreements in terms of wage settlements that they've been familiar with. I think the president is going to put his boot on the necks of public sector officials who are pedestrian, for example, in bringing broader spectrum to bear. So you could argue that the president has probably been unleashed as a function out of sheer necessity. And over the weekend, just very quickly, the anecdote that we draw where seemingly the finance minister, Minister Mboweni, has signaled the president has given him license to act in the posture that he seemingly is biting at the chomp to get on with.
And, I mean, there is no time like the present. If we're to avoid the fundamental depression to which Martin Kingston refers, we've got to take some fairly big and bold steps. Is the sort of action that you're seeing under the Reserve Bank, the dropping of reserve requirements on banks, for example, to help them free up cash to lend into the economy, to provide the flexibility that their customers are going to need in terms of payment holidays, that sort of stuff, the sort of thing that we should be doing? Are we on the right track?
So there's two dimensions to this, at least. One is that policymakers are drawing on the playbook of 2008 and 2009. And for instance, in the United States, you've seen the Fed act in just a few weeks with a vast and raft of measures that it took many months to unleash in 2009. So the historical playbook is being brought to bear. And similarly with the South African Reserve Bank and broader conduct authorities, the South African financial system is so much more fortified since 10 years ago, as it is around the world, precisely because we could not find ourselves again in a situation where banks were fragile. And the responsiveness of the authorities to underpin and maximize an attempted stabilization is at the forefront. A 1 percentage point cut certainly was meaningful as an early foray, but we'll see more of it. And also non-interest rate but liquidity-enhancing measures continue to be enacted by the Reserve Bank to, in other words, make it easier for banks to draw on available liquidity and to find comfort in their available capital requirements.
My thanks to Gula Belim this evening. He is the group economist at Standard Bank and group chief economist at Standard Bank. Also to the vice president at Business Unity South Africa, Martin Kingston. Listening to all of that, John Kenz, the global market strategist at Rand Merchant Bank. And what we've seen since Friday's announcement by Moody's that they are finally putting us into sub-investment grade, into so-called junk status. We've seen the Rand retreat to its lowest levels ever against the dollar and the euro. John Cairns, expected, I suppose, uncomfortable nevertheless.
Yes, Bruce, exactly. But, you know, local market reactions haven't been that bad, all things considered. The Rand, in fact, was only the fourth worst performing currency today. So you would have thought with a downgrade we'd be a massive underperformer. But in fact, no, three other currencies doing much worse than us. So really, the fallout hasn't been as bad in the Rand and even in the bonds. The bond market opened extremely weak, but then fought its way back. And from what we're hearing from our trading desk, we're not seeing a lot of aggressive selling by foreigners at all. Partly that's because we haven't fallen out of the Wigby. But overall, I think, as you mentioned, well anticipated, the market's priced it in.
Now, we have gone from 13-something to 18-something this year. That may account for some of the calm, the relative calm, in currency markets.
Yes, Bruce. And also last week in particular, we saw some Rand underperformance. So it was clear people were putting on some trades, buying the rumor, and then today you sell the fact, you unwind your position. So the Rand opens up at 18.06 and then fights its way back to the 17-18 levels. But you did mention 13-18, just a scary stat to be aware of, relative to previous Rand blowouts, so 2001, 2008, and even 2016, the Rand hasn't actually moved all that much. So certainly it's not really repeating the worst of its performance that we've seen in the past.
That's the optimist view, John. I like your optimistic view on that one. The reality is, though, that a lot of these bond funds that have been invested in South African bonds, because they've been obliged to do so because of our inclusion in bond indices by virtue of the fact that we have been investment grade for nearly 30 years, they have to sell by the end of April. Does this not lead to an acceleration in sales of bonds, which then weakens the currency market further?
Possibly. So if we just put that foreign investor base into two groups, the active funds, in other words, the pension funds, et cetera, who say, yeah, we want to follow the Wigbee, but we don't have to be tracking it exactly. So if they haven't lightened up their positions already, they've now got an opportunity to do so after the downgrade, right? Another incentive to do so. Then there's the passive funds, the ones who must track the index. Now, it's a little bit technical there. Because of the crisis and the volatility, the index provider, the FTSE Russell index provider, has said that they will not be rebalancing their funds on the 1st of April. So we are not falling out of the Wigbee bond index at this stage. Now, FTSE says, okay, if things calm down, then the normal rebalancing will happen on the 1st of May. And if that's the case, then passive funds will have to lighten up then. But it's quite possible that with all the market turmoil, they could delay that again. So it might only be in June that these passive funds have to start lightening up their positions.
So we've got a little bit of room to move. We always have a bit of room to move. But at what point do we become attractive from a junk bond perspective? Because at some point, the yields on our bonds, the amount of money we have to pay to people to risk lending to us, becomes so sexy and so attractive that people are willing to take risk on us.
So I think we are already certainly at that position. The Rand valuation is very attractive for a foreign investor. You come in with a weak Rand, you can get some capital gains because of the Rand movements. Bond yields are extremely attractive by long-term historical levels comparison. But why aren't investors coming in? Why aren't local investors buying the bonds? It's because everyone has been caught by the crisis, is still having to lighten up their asset positions to get hold of cash. So that buying has not been forthcoming yet. Now, saying that, in the past 3 days, we're seeing that those conditions are turning. The global dollar liquidity shortage is easing. We've seen foreigners nibbling in our domestic bond market. So maybe the conditions are turning now and we can start to see some relief coming through in both the bonds and the rand.
John Cairns, thank you very much. He's the global market strategist at Rand Merchant Bank. Well, today on the JSE, the Rand did hit record lows, but that was an opportunity for Rand hedge counters to come to the party. And from an index perspective, the JSE actually ended the day in positive territory. It was up. We've had 4 out of the last 6 sessions, I think, in positive territory. The all-share index up 467 points. 43,413. Markets in Europe have been mixed, but largely positive. US markets have opened on a positive footing as well. Meryl Pick is the fund manager at Old Mutual Equity. She's on the line to us from Cape Town this evening. And Meryl Pick, what do you make of today's market moves in the light of downgrades, social distancing, all of the stuff that we're getting used to 4 days into an economic lockdown?
Good evening, Bruce, and good evening to your listeners. I think in the light of the downgrade, you could have thought it would be turmoil in markets today, but we haven't seen that. And as your previous guest has said, this has been probably the best flagged base telegraph downgrade in history. We've been talking about it for 2 years. It's finally happened. It's almost a relief that someone's just ripped this band-aid off now. The Rand did react somewhat, and we've seen counters like your typical Rand hedge counters like British American Tobacco respond into that weaker Rand. But I think there are many interesting opportunities opening up in an SA Inc. In the SA Inc. space at this time. If you can be a bit cold-hearted and put your emotions, fears, and anxieties to one side and try to imagine a world 3 years from now where we return to some level of normality. My word, we've got South African counters trading at single-digit price-to-earnings ratios on what we think are normalized earnings levels. This is an opportunity we haven't seen in more than a decade.
Yeah, and again, you've got to park your fear and you've got to park all emotion to take those sorts of steps. But the reality is, Meryl, no, not many of us have much cash. When you get surprised, as we all have been by the speed of a total economic shutdown. Unfortunately, it ends up being just those with, you know, quite substantial amounts of capital that tend to benefit from crises like these, because they're able to take the long-term view. They've got a million or two in the bank, or a billion or two in the bank, and they're able to therefore risk capital over a longer period of time. For lots of people, they're so cash constrained at the moment that they dare not put any money anywhere near a market.
But we are certainly advising investors not to liquidate any money at this stage either, because we have seen such a sharp correction. History tells us that from levels this low, one can almost only recover. And every time we have seen a correction of this nature, we've seen a recovery. So this is certainly the worst time to sell, if you can afford not to sell.
So tell me then about some of today's interesting moves. I mean, last week, Edcon said it wouldn't be able to pay its debtors. Those debtors included shopping centres, where Edcon lets about a million square metres of space across its multiple stores and three brands. It can't pay any of its suppliers. The big blow to the shopping mall owners. Then the Foschini Group over the weekend says, we're not going to pay either. And others are suddenly going, hold on a second, if they don't have to pay, we don't have to pay. And today, as I understand it, there have been buckets of meetings with people drawing attention to contracts, drawing attention to agreements, drawing attention to principles. And the property sector, not surprisingly, under huge pressure.
Certainly. So I think before even this pandemic, the property sector has been facing some structural headwinds. Globally, we've seen a rise in online retail, you know, speculation about whether we've seen the peak of bricks and mortar retail. Bricks and mortar retail having to work harder and harder to attract feet into their stores. So this clearly has a knock-on effect on the owners of property, being the landlords. In a scenario like this, where there's already a surplus of space in South Africa, retailers are certainly in a position to go to landlords cap in hand and say, well, these are unusual circumstances. It's not our fault that you're closing the mall as such to comply. We're seeing those sorts of negotiations starting to happen. Where does this actually end? Do we see, for example, a restructuring of contracts to focus on turnover to rental? That is a possibility. Do property companies engage their banks in turn, you know, to talk about how to mitigate or navigate this period? We don't quite know how this is going to end up. And it all depends on how long a shutdown we're actually talking about here, and how well South Africa does to contain the infection. We've certainly acted a lot more decisively and earlier than many other countries have. So perhaps the silver lining here is that we don't need as protracted a shutdown as some other countries may need.
From your lips, Meryl, from your lips. I mean, the banks are coming under huge pressure as well following the downgrade, because they've got customers, they've got to keep lending into the market. They've got to keep the liquidity in the economy going. The Reserve Bank has lifted some restrictions on capital to give them some space, to give freedom to their customers that they ordinarily wouldn't have had. But there's some big corporate customers that are going into default and will default and will fail. And that's probably why South Africa's banks got hit hard today.
I mean, to some extent, it's going to be different bank by bank. So we know certain banks have, for example, more exposure to the Edcon Group. However, in turn, something like the Edcon Group has been in a weak position for nearly 5 years now. Yeah. So if you dig into the detail, you start to find banks have provided for some of the businesses that were already on weak footing. So much like the downgrade, a lot of this has been well telegraphed. And to use Edcon as an example, we've got a crisis that is probably now crystallizing and accelerating a situation that they have been kicking down the road for years now.
But look, not everything's so falling apart.
In many cases, it's provided for.
Yeah, okay. Now, that's useful to remember. Sanlam and Santam came out with updates for the first 2 months of this year, just before all hell broke loose. And the updates are actually pretty good. I mean, the fundamentals of many companies are actually fine. Barloworld is perhaps a reminder to us that our economy was also in a mess before the shutdown, and it's just made things worse. Things were far from rosy. Netcare is understandably wary about what lies ahead. It's a big mixed sort of fruit salad of experiences.
Yeah, I mean, something like Netcare, you might think your first response to a healthcare crisis might be to think, gee, hospitals will benefit from this, right? In the sense of they'll see increased volume. But what the hospital groups have been flagging for a while is that they actually expect a drop-off in elective surgery cases, which roughly make up 50% of volumes in a hospital. You can imagine if you were meant to go for a procedure but that can actually reasonably be delayed and isn't life-threatening to delay, you know, you wouldn't go near a hospital now and risk exposing yourself to COVID. However, we need to focus on which companies have got demand that disappears forever, as in, if you don't spend this money now, you're never going to spend it, versus demand that does come back when things normalize. If you needed to do a hip replacement, maybe you don't do it now in the next 6 months, but you probably still need to do that. So maybe you're doing it next year. You know, so there are certain industries where demand comes back when things calm down. I think the hospitals find themselves in that space with elective surgery. They are going to have to do some sort of a social service, it seems, in supporting the public sector to treat patients. So that will, you know, not generate much margin, but I think we salute healthcare companies for pulling their weight at this stage.
Absolutely. Meryl Peck, thank you. She's the fund manager at the Old Mutual Equities.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that has the bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity.
Welcome to the Money Show. We're going to have to be flexible this evening as the president is scheduled at 7:30 tonight to address the country. We know that it's not been particularly on time, and that's because this is a very fast-moving, high-paced environment in which the president has got a lot of duties to balance. It'd be good for it to have him bang on time this evening, but we'll keep a clear eye on it. And as and when it happens, we will bring it live to you. On your next Money Show, Glenn Birkin, soccer stars and athletes manager, will be on a How It Works feature. He's managed a couple of Bafana Bafana players. Also to discuss the impact on coronavirus on the sports industry. That leagues and other large sporting tournaments cancel their events, and it's devastating for the incomes of many people. Also, our Africa Business Report and so much great advertising and great collaboration at the moment. I wonder if Andy Rice will have any zeros with his heroes. All that next, coming up on The Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702. For the curious.
More to come this evening on The Money Show as we look at the state of small business. And of course, small businesses very much at risk. And the stoppage that has been precipitated by the outbreak of this virus, COVID-19, and we see many small businesses are going to fail. Lots of programs announced, lots of plans put in place, but the IDC, now this is their job. Their job as the Industrial Development Corporation, it's a state entity, is to invest in potential growth businesses. And they've, you know, had mixed success in recent years because they're expected to take more risk, perhaps, than commercial banks are expected to take. But the IDC saying it's committed about 3 billion rand to the objective of helping distressed businesses and to prop up some ailing sectors of the economy. TP Njotjo is the chief executive at the Industrial Development Corporation. TP, how do you decide between the businesses that you support, the businesses that you need to let go in a time like this? Because capital is going to become incredibly scarce, and you don't want to be throwing good money after bad.
Good evening, Bruce. That's a very difficult question, but I suppose if you consider that, you know, the IDC's balance sheet is spread across all sectors. I mean, we have investments in the automotive sector, in coal, in platinum, and so on, manganese and agriculture and tourism and so on. We have to do something. We have to try and support some of these sectors through the difficult times. But to your question, surely one of the criteria that we will be considering is that the companies that will be supported under this initiative should have their fundamentals still pretty much promising. In other words, the distress that they are suffering should not be a consequence of, you know, inefficiencies and mismanagement and so on. So there has to be a measure of confidence that post this period, such businesses could continue to emerge and be viable going forward.
So what's the difference between identifying which companies are going through liquidity constraints, in other words, cash flow problems, and which ones are fundamentally dead in the water?
Well, we'll have to do our evaluation with each and every case that comes our way, isn't it? I mean, if you think about the fact that, you know, South Africa is so well connected, heavily connected to the world economy. I mean, almost 48% of of our exports go into countries that are at the moment in lockdown across major economies of the world, whether you're talking the EU, China, India, US, and the United Arab Emirates, and so on. I mean, already the IMF is talking deep recessions in these economies into the foreseeable future. So yes, companies are going to come under stress, but we have to apply business principles to evaluate the fundamentals and be able to say, look, here is a manganese company that supplies into China. It has been doing so over the past number of years. Surely what is being interrupted now is its supply chain, and that supply chain, by God's grace, will be restored post this particular crisis. And so a business like that would be favorably looked at by the IDC.
Who is going to qualify for assistance? I mean, what are, again, it's a case-by-case basis, but broadly speaking.
Broadly speaking, yes, we're talking here, one, Bruce, the enterprises have to be within the mandate of the IDC. In other words, in agro-processing, forestry, and so on. They have to be in mining, they have to be in manufacturing, and the kind of services sectors that we support, like tourism, as well as infrastructure sectors, including energy supply. So they have to be within the mandate of the IDC. Two, they have to be, they can be existing clients or new clients to the IDC. In the third instance, I've said that the business surely has to have its fundamentals right and therefore impacted primarily in a negative way by the pandemic, not necessarily in distress as a consequence of mismanagement and so on. So the upper limit of what we are proposing is that each enterprise would qualify to a maximum of 100 million rand. But as you can imagine, Bruce, it will depend on the sector. Certain sectors might be far smaller amounts, maybe other sectors in the upper limit of that cap. And so we also have to make sure that we check for double dipping. You know, government has also announced other schemes like by the Small Business Ministry and so on and so on. So we have to ensure that people do not game the system and double dip. Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, the opportunity for fraud. We see so many charlatans and shysters out at the moment. TP and Giorgio, thank you. Chief Executive at the IDC, the Industrial Development Corporation. Absolutely pivotal, of course, that institutions like the IDC step into the breach. But you get bust. And, you know, people are going to try and double dip. People are going to try and game the system. And if you are bust, I hope they shut you down, chuck you in jail, and throw away the key. 702.
Bruce is on The Money Show.
Well, the in-hospital pharmacies at Netcare hospitals are suspending services to the general public as from today until further notice. And this is part of their efforts to reduce the risk of introducing COVID-19 into the hospitals. And it's if you go to a hospital and you've got symptoms, they will look after you. They will, of course, care for you. But they don't want people without symptoms or people who don't seem to have any sort of risk associated with them going and queuing up in their pharmacies. There are lots of pharmacies all over the place. But taking sick people into hospital is high risk, of course. And it does make sense. They want to reduce the risk of transmission within their general wards. And so they've taken that decision. Certainly lots of moves afoot to prepare for a more serious outbreak than we've seen to date. South Africa's Public Health Work Group calling on all companies, especially those in lockdown, to divert their stocks of PPEs, personal protective equipment, to use in the national healthcare sector. Head of the Public Health Work Group at Business for South Africa is Stavros Nicolaou. Stavros, what sort of industries are you talking about? What sort of industries outside of the healthcare sector ordinarily would have the kind of equipment which is so urgently needed right now?
Bruce, thanks. Good evening to you and your listeners. A typical example would be the mining sector. So these are sectors that, as a matter of course, have to keep PPE. And in these times of need, I think we're calling on them and other sectors. And just generally the public, if they're able to access credible PPEs, of course, these things all need to be validated. We've been swamped with a plethora of inadequate or inappropriate material as well. So I think the plea is those organizations and individuals out there who have no use for their PP at this point in time, please make it available, but please make certain that it's the legit thing.
And also people be worried about whether stuff is sterile or not. They'll be worried about the quality of gear. If they're unsure, where can they get proper information as to what you need?
So Bruce, generally we're calling for N95 masks, otherwise known as respirators. We're calling for general masks, aprons, gloves, latex gloves. These are all packaged and sealed. So provided they've still got the seal, and as I said, they're validated products, then that is exactly what we need. To find out more detail, we've made a email address available. I'd like to announce it at the end, if you don't mind, and would also appreciate you tweeting it or sure, Making it available to the listeners. So if you'll allow me a second, I'll just read it out. It's quite easy to remember. Just give me a moment.
It's easy to remember, so you need to check it up. But that's okay. Rather be safe than sorry, Stavros. What is the email address? I tell you what, Stavros, you give it to my producer, Tukiso Lefifi, and he will give it to me and make sure that we get that email address into the public domain.
702. Bruce is on The Money Show.
I'm going to read you just one thing today. It's a letter from an acclaimed Italian novelist by the name of Francesca Melandri, written to fellow Europeans from what he calls their future. He says, I'm writing to you from Italy, which means I'm writing to you from your future. We are now where you will be in a few days. The epidemic's charts show us we are all entwined in a parallel dance. We are but a few steps ahead of you in the path of time, just like Wuhan was a few weeks ahead of us. We watch you as you behave just as we did. You hold the same arguments we did until a short time ago, between those who say, it's only flu, why all the fuss? And those who have already understood. As we watch you from here, from your future, we know that many of you, as you were told to lock yourselves up in your homes, quoted Orwell, some even Hobbes. But soon, you'll be too busy for that. First of all, you'll eat, not just because it'll be one of the few last things that you can still do. You'll find dozens of social networking groups with tutorials on how to spend your free time in fruitful ways. You'll join them all and then ignore them completely after a few days. You'll pull apocalyptic literature out of your bookshelves. But you will soon find you don't really feel like reading any of it. You'll eat again. You'll not sleep well. You'll ask yourselves what's happening to democracy. You'll have an unstoppable online social life on Messenger, WhatsApp, Skype, Zoom. You will miss your adult children like you never have before. The realization that you have no idea when you will ever see them again will hit you like a punch in the chest. Old resentments and falling outs will seem irrelevant. You will call people you'd sworn never to talk to ever again just to ask them, how are you doing? Many women will be beaten in their homes. You will wonder what is happening to all of those who can't stay at home because they don't have one. You will feel vulnerable when going out shopping in the deserted streets, especially if you are a woman. You'll ask yourselves if this is how societies collapse. Does it really happen so fast? You'll block out these thoughts, and then when you get back home again, you'll eat. You'll put on weight. You'll look for online fitness training. You'll laugh. You'll laugh a lot. You'll flaunt a gallows humor you've never had before. Even people who've always taken everything dead seriously will contemplate the absurdity of life, of the universe, and of it all. You will make appointments in the supermarket queues with your friends and lovers so as briefly to see them in person, all while abiding by social distancing rules. You will count on all the things you do not need. The true nature of the people around you will be revealed with total clarity. You will have confirmations and surprises. Literati have been omnipresent in the news, will disappear, their opinions suddenly irrelevant. Some will take refuge in rationalizations, which will be so totally lacking in empathy that people will stop listening to them. People whom you'd overlooked instead will turn out to be reassuring, generous, reliable, pragmatic, clairvoyant even. Those who invite you to see all this mess as an opportunity for planetary renewal will help you put things into a larger perspective. You will also find them terribly annoying. Nice, the planet is breathing better because of halved CO2 emissions, but how will you pay your bills next month? You will not understand if witnessing the birth of a new world is a more grandiose or miserable affair. You'll pay music from your windows and lawns. When you saw us singing opera from our balconies, you thought, ah, those Italians. But we know you will sing uplifting songs to each other too. And when you blast I Will Survive from your windows, we'll watch you nod just like the people of Wuhan who sung from their windows in February as they nodded while watching us. Many of you will fall asleep vowing that the very first thing you will do as soon as the lockdown is over is file for divorce. Many children will be conceived. Your children will be schooled online. They'll be horrible nuisances, but they'll also give you joy. Elderly people will disobey you like rowdy teenagers. You'll have to fight with them in order to forbid them from going out, to get infected and die. You will try not to think about the lonely deaths inside ICU. You'll want to cover those rose petals on all medical workers' steps. You will want to be told that society is united in communal effort, that you are all in the same boat. It will be true. This experience will change for good how you perceive yourself as an individual part of a larger whole. Class, however, will make the difference. Being locked up in a house with a pretty garden or with an overcrowded housing project will not be the same. Nor is being able to work from home or seeing your job disappear. That boat that you'll be sailing in order to defeat the epidemic will not look the same to everyone, nor is it actually the same for everyone. It never was. At some point, you'll realize it's tough. You will be afraid. You will share your fear with your dear ones, or you will keep to yourselves so as not to burden them with it too. Then you will eat again. We're in Italy, and this is what we know about your future. But it's just small-scale fortune-telling. We are very low-key seers. If we turn our gaze to the more distant future, the future which is unknown both to you and to us too, we can only tell you when this is over, the world won't be the same. What a lovely letter, and a poignant letter, and an important letter. A letter from an Italian author, a novelist by the name of Francesca Melandri, written to fellow Europeans, but might as well, frankly, have written that to you and me.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Catch up with Wandile Sehlobo, his brand new book, Finding Common Ground. That's coming up in a couple of minutes' time. And then the president scheduled to speak on measures and give some feedback on measures to contain COVID-19. I hope that he's on time this evening. He's got a big schedule. So we'll keep a very close eye on it and bring that to you live. In the meantime, we have got our Make Money Monday special edition guest on standby for you this evening. She is raring to go. Karen Zoid. She is a musician. She is the television host at Republiek van Zuid-Afrika. You see what she did there? And so we'll chat to her at 7:30. Unless, of course, the president is on time tonight. But first, if you're worried about losing your home during the COVID-19 crisis, there is a chance your bank might just cut you some slack. But it's not going to be a blanket debt forgiveness or of any kind or general payment amnesty. Like everything, T's and C's are going to apply. And all of the banks have come through with their various measures. They're all going to have nuances on their interpretation on relaxation and regulation that allows them to give you a little bit of space. So if you do find yourself massively constrained and you do find that you are going to come unstuck, rather talk to your bank sooner rather than later. Have a discussion with them. Be absolutely clear. Chances are they probably know you're in trouble already, long before you do. Their data analysis will point that out to them. But the sooner you go to them and put your hand up and say, please help, the sooner they can do that. The Money Show is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. They have put contingency plans in place to ensure an uninterrupted banking service for you. Stay safe. Absa is a registered FSP. Well, Absa has this evening come through with a 16 million rand contribution to a fund in order to alleviate some of the COVID-19 efforts that are in place. We see a statement from Absa tonight saying they've initiated initial 15 million rand contribution to the COVID-19 fight. Funds will extend access to testing and hygiene materials in marginalized communities, public health and reporting awareness campaigns, and also food for a redirected from the cancelled Absa Cape Epic to vulnerable communities, which is a nice gesture as well. Also, First Rand announcing today Aspire intervention, a relief effort. It aims to assist government and its partners in mitigating the impact of COVID-19 rapidly and at scale. Over the weekend, of course, we saw the Sanlam group of companies at Sanlam and Santam, and Patrice Motsepe was a big shareholder there, and the chairman, he at one point was the chairman of Sanlam, and of course, an absolutely committed philanthropist, adding his weight to the Ruperts and the Oppenheimers as well, those billion rand contributions. But Spire, says First Rand, will work closely with and in support of the Solidarity Response Fund and other industry and sector initiatives. Mary Vilakazi is the Chief Operating Officer of the First Rand Group, on the line to us from Joburg this evening. You're making 100 million rand available, Mary. Is this 100 million rand once off? Is 100 million rand down payment on expected future payments, 100 million rand over 6 months, a year? What are the T's and C's associated with the Spire Fund?
Good evening, Bruce, and thank you very much for having me on your show. Look, I guess at this point in time, we have asked our foundations, First Rand Foundations, which have over the last 20 years played a very key role, particularly in education in South Africa. So we said, you know, given the current crisis, are you willing to get involved in this? And which they immediately said yes. And then we also went to our franchises, FNB, RMB, and West Bank, who also came to the party, and they said they believe they wanted to be part of the urgent solutions that are required to to help the healthcare system deal with the COVID-19 challenges. So that's a commitment that we have to date. Bruce, let's hope that I think the role that we are going to play, the role that all the parties that we engage with on a regular basis who have pledged and who want to actually get involved, let's hope that I think we'll make a big dent towards supporting the healthcare system over the next month or two. Look, I suppose whether this is it, I suppose it just depends on the kind of challenges South Africa is going to face. I think we all know that, our country has unique characteristics and unique challenges. This is what's in Europe. So I don't know. I think at this point in time, we are showing up. We are helping where we can. We know the country needs more testing kits. We know the medical staff needs assistance with protective gear. We are getting involved in that. We know we're going to need more ventilators. We are going to need, critical bed and space capacity. So various teams at First Rand, FNB, RMB, across the board of the foundations are getting involved just to make sure that we do what we can at speed.
And that's critical, isn't it? I mean, it's the speed of the matter. Are you comfortable handing over 100 million rand EFT, I was going to say check, but it's an EFT nowadays, in one whack to the Solidarity Response Fund? How do you ensure that the money you hand over is managed to your satisfaction?
So what we're doing at the moment, Bruce, is that because by the time that the president announces Solidarity Response Fund, Spire had already been put in place. So we reached out to the Solidarity Response Fund to make them familiar with what we are intending to do. And, you know, I think those discussions are ongoing. We've reached out to BUSA. So some of the people on the Spire task team are part of the work streams for BUSA and also the Solidarity Response Fund. So we've agreed that we would work alongside them. So what we are doing is really in support of what they have been set up to do. So you could say that we are an arm of the Solidarity Response Fund. So we've carried on with the things that we had set to do a week before the Solidarity Response Fund was put in place. And also they've come on board and I think taken on some of the links that we had started and also just worked on them. So we are working, so you could say we are part of the Solidarity ecosystem. But I think for us, the ability to move quickly is key. And I think it's something that we think is a strength and it's something that we've been able to get going. So I think, you know, we are doing all of this really. It's really one national effort and we're working closely with them to make sure that we are not duplicating and that we are just also not competing. I think where one is doing something, you know, the other one must then tackle a different challenge.
Isn't it amazing, Mary? I mean, as you sit and we talk about this, it's like it's the easiest thing in the world. I mean, we get together, we collaborate, we cooperate. We've got, for the first time in our history, the world has got one common enemy. And that one common enemy is invisible, and it's deadly, and it's terrifying. And not only is it causing a global pandemic and an international health crisis, but it threatens to crush economies. And, I mean, that's why it is in your own best interests, I mean, to be perfectly blunt about it, that this thing gets, you know, that we get through the lockdown as quickly as possible, that we eliminate as much risk as possible from a health perspective so that we can get back to work.
No, agreed, Bruce. But, you know, I suppose, you know, if you think about how we started Spire, it was because at first when we sat back with the various franchises and said, how can we get involved? And we managed to get this thing going just in 2 weeks and, you know, raise funds and really get teams properly set up and get orders already initiated. But this is not only this is not the first initiative. I think we often sit and we offer government, I think, our capacity. You know, we offer government the talent of our people who really want to make a difference. So I'm hoping that when we have dealt with COVID-19, that, you know, I think as a nation, we reflect back on these moments when everybody's come together and said, look, we want to be part of us. We want to be part of the group that's solving a problem. And that I think we do that with all our other challenges. So for me, I'm hoping, you know, I think what this initiative demonstrates is the value that can be unlocked through effective partnerships between governments and the operational capacity that sits within the private sector.
Mary Vilakazi, thank you very much. Chief Operating Officer at First Rand. Announcement of a 100 million rand contribution via the Spire initiative from within the First Rand Group to the Solidarity Response Fund.
Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Now, I don't know if we're going to get to tonight's Make Money Monday's guest because the president is scheduled to speak from 7:30. And I say from 7:30 because it's unclear, you know, he's had trouble getting started on time previously because of all the demands on that time. So we keep an open mind. Keep an open mind as a result of previous experience. But certainly looking forward, if we can, to speak to Karen Zoid tonight, the musician. She's a TV host of the Republic von Zoid Africa. She recently participated in the most marvelous collaborative video. And we've seen quite a few of these actually happen online, and people are very motivated. A friend of mine called Andrew Tim collaborated with Rodine Girls, and they did the most marvelous rendition of the Hallelujah Chorus. And I posted that on social media, and people were crying all weekend. But a wonderful full-page ad over the weekend, South Africa's major food retailers collaborating in an advert using all of their logos. It was so cool to see how these food retailers are standing together. And then there's that wonderful video produced last week for Pick and Pay, featuring a host of South Africa's best musicians, all done via a digital conference call. That's what's so amazing about these things, that people are sitting at home in their lounges being creative. The gigs are cancelled. Times are tough for artists, but They're finding alternative ways to keep themselves occupied and hopefully make a little bit of money. The quality is magnificent. One of those artists is our Make Money Monday's guest this evening, Karen Zoid. The first voice you will hear in this wonderful piece of corporate creativity. And you don't often hear me say those words, corporate creativity, unless I'm referring to accounting. But this was the height of panic buying. And Pick and Pay came out with this ad. The first voice you will hear will be Karen's.
The whole wide world has gone insane. 'Cause suddenly the things we know are not the same. But that doesn't mean we lose control. 'Cause now's the time to keep from falling apart.
We gotta keep love in our hearts.
Friends, don't let friends panic by. 'Cause you don't wanna be that guy. Please think of those in need. We got a lot of hungry mouths to feed.
What good will it do if you take all the luro?
Bro, Muni Ali, Blari, Tipi, Fati.
Leave some pasta for a brother or a mother in need.
We all one family tree.
The whole wide world needs to work together now.
So please don't take any more than you need.
Come on now.
Friends, don't let friends panic by.
There's enough coming up, so don't take more than you need.
'Cause you don't wanna be that guy.
There's enough coming up on the shelf, you will see.
Please think of those in need.
Think about what you really need.
We got a lot of hungry mouths to feed.
Tick, 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 tick. I said, belief, ammo, chocolate, the biki. Muni, I freaky, chicky. Buy the shop. Muni, me coupe, si needy, this greedy. Yeah, they're out, but what's it soon?
Consider that they must survive too. They do number twos just like you. So don't be that guy. Los a barbaco to ply. Sanitize greed in the mind. What is so, guys? We need each other to stay clean to survive.
Friends, don't let friends. Panic by.
There's enough coming up, so don't take more than you need.
'Cause you don't wanna be that guy.
There's enough coming up on the shelf, you will see.
It's just lovely. Some of South Africa's greatest artists, and so many of them have been Make Money Monday's guests. We've just had Zolani from the formerly of Freshly Ground, and Khan Morby was in there, and Karen Zoid, who we've got this evening, depending. Of course, I've just been sent a picture. She's sitting at home, got her headphones on. She's zoomed in. And if the president is delayed for any reason, we'll get to her just after Eyewitness News at 7:30. But she's being very understanding. She's willing to make way for the president. She's not panic buying. Half an hour on the radio.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that has the bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity.
Well, like my book, Wandile Sehlobo's debut book, Finding Common Ground, is safely under lock and key at bookshops around the country. It's so frustrating for any author who's poured their heart and soul into a book, who's gone through the onerous publication process, and it is tough, and the early publicity process. And then there's an emergency and all your stock gets locked up and nobody can get access to it. But digital books are available. Some physical copies did get out before the lockdown. Before the book, Wandile Sehlobo, economist at the Agricultural Business Chamber and author of Finding Common Ground. Thank goodness for solid, dependable commercial agriculture. Without it, we'd be in really, really serious trouble, wouldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to the advert that you were playing just now on your TV, on your radio, it speaks to that we do have sufficient supplies. And I think with what we have, we will be able to be in good footing at least up until March 2021. So it's all thanks to the guys that are hard at work as we speak even now, because agriculture is really not in lockdown. The guys are hard in the fields harvesting.
You're a guy who loves farms. You love farmers. You love people who work on farms. You love people in the food supply chain. You're a guy who lives his craft. Your book is a collection of articles, and you've written those over a long period of time. And I think what's getting to people is just how many opportunities have been missed to fix the mess over a long period of time. People like yourselves have been warning of a crisis in agriculture, warning of a crisis in land reform for an awfully long time. And because it's a tough thing to fix, the can's been kicked down the road for an awfully long time.
Yeah, I think, Bruce, we've missed a number of opportunities, which exactly on the book we try to capture those. But it's never too late, because I think with the cooperation that we are beginning to see now between private sector as well as business, I think right after COVID-19, there could be an opportunity to really make land reform work. Because if we begin to think about rural development and extra jobs on agriculture and some employment in the rural economies, private sector and agriculture and government will have to come together on that point. There is no singular partner that can actually make that work. And I think in the book, we also capture some of the case studies of the areas where this cooperation has happened and the results have been really great. And I think that the whole drive behind, I would say, half of the book is really on a land reform side, laying out where we fell short and also laying out on what are some of the opportunities in the future that we can actually focus on. And I hope that after all of the current challenges, we can begin to think about this in that sort of way, which is more progressive and also developmental focused.
So much of it, though, is based on the incompetence of civil servants, the vested interests on corruption, and land reform was hard enough before COVID-19. It either becomes a lot harder or it becomes a national imperative. And your overall thrust is that this has got to be a national imperative. We either do this in a structured and organized and fair way, or the wheels come off quite seriously through the process.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole view on why I'm emphasizing a lot of the private sector engagement. Because the two things here, the government institutions that we have, I don't think that they are fully fit on capacity to deliver what is needed, as well as the expectations on the ground. But if we look on the private sector agricultural side, there are some expertise there that we can lean on. But not only that, I think there's also capital that is outside, which could fall through to the sector and be utilized productively if there could be some sort of a common ground on understanding of what we need to do out of the sector, which is why I would discourage a situation where the state could say, private sector, sit aside, I'm solely leading this. I think it has to be a partnership approach. If you read on the book, we talk about land reform funds, we talk about all other instruments that we think they should drive the focus on a land reform. And all of those are leaning on private sector, community to a certain extent, but largely on a private business. And so I think the private sector can assist on setting up the rules of the game, but I think on delivery side, we really need the private businesses to operate onto that.
Wandile, thank you so much. The president is about to speak. I need to let you go. Finding Common Ground, locked up in a bookshop near you. Digital books, of course, are available. Wandile Sehlobo, agricultural economist at the Agriculture Business Chamber and author of Finding Common Ground. If you want to understand land and land reform, there is nobody better, frankly, to read than Wandile Sehlobo.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that has the bravery to imagine and the will to get things done. That's Africanacity.
We're keeping an eye to make sure that you don't miss the president this evening. First, though, time for your latest eyewitness news at 7:30.